Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
Alright everybody, this is it, the final segment of this extended version of the Jay's Place show, closing our U.S. Open coverage. And we are bringing back Fred Atwater of both Golf News Network and Bat 9 Network. We spoke with him earlier in the show, so we're going to have our final segment talking about Dustin Johnson's victory and the rules, brouhaha, imbroglio, gaff, whatever you want to call it. So, Fred, let's get right to it. You know, what were your impressions of the way that 2016 U.S. Open came to a close?
Well, it's unfortunate that Dustin Johnson, who played fantastic, just drove the ball. He put on a driving exhibition like we have not ever seen before, hitting at 345, 360 in some cases, in the middle of the fairway with that fade that Butch has him. That was just outstanding. A little bit of problem with his wedges still. It could have been better with the wedges, but he played great. But, Jay, the way the USGA handled the ball moving as he addressed it on the fifth green, that whole thing was a complete mess up from start to finish. And I have yet to hear one person take the USGA side on the penalty and the way they handled it. Everyone is totally against how that whole thing came down.
All right, well, let me, if I may be forgiven, don't use the word address. He did not address the ball.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, for those of you that are listening, here's the way it works. There were two rules. There was pre-2016 and post-2016. And I do not believe that Dustin violated a rule either way. Okay, here's what happened. Dustin was getting ready to putt for par on the fifth hole. He was standing not behind the golf ball, but, you know, where he would take his normal stance, but a step back and practicing, you know, perpendicular to the line that he was going to play. And as he stepped up to the ball and began to get ready to ground the club behind it and address the ball moved one dimple. Okay? Under the old rule, because he did not sole the club or ground the club, he would have been able to replace it, no penalty. Under the new rule, the test is, did he do something to make the ball move? And by all accounts, you're absolutely right, Fred. I have not heard a single person say, yes, it was a penalty, nor did I hear a single person say that the way the USGA handled it was proper, because what they did was on the fifth hole, when the referee came out and said, what's going on? Everybody told him, he said, no penalty, play on. Now, everybody's not exactly correct when they say, oh, that's it, that's the end, you can't overturn a rules official. That is not the case. There is an appeal procedure. Okay, that if someone does not like the ruling that they get, they can appeal up the line all the way to, you know, the tournament director. But either way, everybody agreed at that situation, no harm, no foul. But then they come seven holes later, and they say, maybe we're going to penalize you. We'll talk to you after the round. You know, what they said was, we told them we're likely to penalize you. We'll hear your case after the round. But that's no way to handle it, because then everybody is playing with uncertainty. You can't have that. You can't say, we're not sure, Cavaliers and Warriors, whether that was a three-pointer or a two-pointer. So just keep playing the rest of the game, and we'll decide it at the end. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and you know, there's several points. There's several points in this whole thing, Jay. Number one, I didn't see it, but someone was telling me that Curtis Strange did a segment for Fox where he put a ball down on the green and just blew on it slightly, and the ball rolled 25 feet. So, I mean,
yes,
the greens were so fast. There's so much undulation. I mean, anything could have moved that ball. A blade of grass moving could have moved that ball. Dustin, it just didn't appear like he touched it or caused it to move in any way. So then, go ahead.
No, you were saying then before.
Then before, And bear in mind that it Lee Westwood was his playing partner, and it's Lee Westwood's obligation to protect the rest of the field and make sure that the rules are being abided by. And he vehemently agreed with Dustin and argued with the USGA officials. And the other point is that the official with the group is the chairman of the USGA Rules Committee. He's also the treasurer, was the general counsel. He's a retired attorney from a prominent law firm in D.C. He is no slouch. He knows what he's talking about. So you have all these things before it ever went to the videotape. And so I have a problem with all sports today, whether it's baseball, football, basketball. I think video play is being replay is being used way too much, and I think it's inappropriate and it's not being used correctly in golf. And so basically the USGA is telling Lee Westwood, Dustin Johnson, and the official Mark Newell in this case, you guys are all liars, you know what you're talking about.
It was unfortunate, you know, that the tournament had this sort of amateurish moment to it. I can guarantee you that, you know, they'll put something in place next year that this won't happen. But, you know, you have to give tournament directors around the world a little bit of leeway because no matter what you do, there's always going to be a situation that falls between the cracks. But what you don't do is you don't continue the tournament and leave everybody in limbo like that. You know, that was the biggest mistake of all. You make your decision one way or the other. It's very subjective, okay? Did he cause something to make that ball move? You know, the only thing that I can imagine is that he was putting so close to that ball, you know, and standing so close to that ball that, you know, it moved one dimple, okay? But it moved one dimple to the side the wrong way. And, you know, whatever call you're going to make, you make it. And you make it right then and there so everybody knows, not, you know, having to wait until the end and decide maybe what might have happened. So in a way, it was a very good thing that Dustin dropped a couple of birdies in there and everybody else fell away. Otherwise, there would be question marks and asterisks and a lot more anger than there is. If it was at all possible, the USGA actually made Dustin Johnson a sympathetic figure.
Oh, absolutely. And Dustin Johnson also took the USGA off the hook by making a couple birdies coming in. And you know, when they addressed him on the 12th tee about the possible penalty, he only had a tenuous two-shot lead with seven holes to go. And, you know, they're more likely to make bogeys and dreaded others than making birdies and pars. So, you know, he did a great job coming in to extend his lead so that even with the additional one-shot penalty, he still ended up winning by three shots. So he really took them off the hook by playing well coming in.
He did. Hats off to Dustin, you know, for the phenomenal play. Okay, he drove the ball beautifully. His iron shots were excellent. The birdie on 18, okay, coming down the stretch. Even though Oakmont for 3 days was Soakmont, it finally became itself at the end of the day on Sunday. So that's what made the birdie on 18 an exclamation point. You know, I still, you know, have my concerns and hopes that, you know, Dustin's behavior going forward, you know, off the golf course becomes on par, pardon the pun, with his play so that we can continue to look at him as a sympathetic figure. I'm not willing to engage in all of the hagiographic hero worship that everybody else is, you know, for a number of reasons. Okay, they're golfers. They're not saving the world, you know. And because, you know, Dustin's been a colorful figure, and, you know, at any time, at any moment, demons may pop back up. You know, it's a constant struggle that he lives under. You know, so hopefully that the team that he's put around him will do a better job of, you know, being forthright and transparent than they have so far in the past. But other than that, you know, he did it. He broke through. He slammed the door on a lot of the bad days of his past, and now it's time to look forward to Royal Troon.
Yeah, I got two more points if we got time to make them here.
We do, yes.
Yeah, number one, one of the best quotes that I've heard out of this thing, I don't know who to attribute it to, I'm sorry, but it's, if the putter didn't hit, you must acquit. which I like.
Well, again, that's under the old rule. The new rule is, if you see, do it. If you're impressed, you do it, whatever it might be. But, you know, one dimple the wrong way on 15, you know, stimp greens. Something's got
to
change.
The second point is that the USGA continues to take these great classic golf courses and just want, they just feel like they need to make them nearly unplayable to determine a good test of golf. I completely disagree with that. I think the USGA just goes completely overboard, and they completely ruined Chambers Bay last year, which is a great golf course, but it looks, they turned it into a parking lot basically and tried to play golf on it. This year, Oakmont plays difficult every day of the week. They really didn't need to do anything there, and they still got those greens back to between 14 and 15 on Sunday, even after all the rain on Thursday. So, and you know, they were really fast on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday when guys were practicing. They were unbelievable. So I don't know why they need to do this. I don't get it. They've been doing it for years, and Mike Davis thinks it's a wonderful thing, but I tend to disagree with him. And I just feel like they just go too far, Jay.
Well, you know, I can't say that. Mike Davis is great at rough, has at least done two things. Number one, it's made it more fair for guys who just missed the fairway by a little bit. And number two, it's made driving accuracy far less important than it used to be. Greens in regulation is still the number one stat, followed closely by putting. And, you know, the shaved chipping areas give guys a chance to show off their short game. So it's been a dramatic improvement in the last 11 years. The other thing is, you know, with the advances in equipment, letting guys use football helmets on sticks and letting guys play with super balls, you kind of have to turn the golf course, you know, into a faster and firmer course. Now, granted, they use fast and firm conditions to limit scoring, whereas you're supposed to use fast and firm conditions to allow people to play the ground game so that guys like you and I can stay even with guys who can play lawn darts all day. You know, so I think they've got the mix right pretty good. You're right, Chambers Bay is a phenomenal golf course. You know, we can split hairs. I think it was more a little bit of bad luck than anything else that the course did not look good on television. But I was there at Chambers Bay last year. I think it took a few hits unfairly from the television guys who were too used to seeing everything be so green. They had, you know, we loved Biscuit Brown at the British Open, and we absolutely genuflected and made the sign of the cross when we had Biscuit Brown at Pinehurst. Every time they took a divot at Pinehurst, a cloud of dust went up. But because it's Tom Ross, 100 years old, we all had to, you know, genuflect. Instead, they go to Chambers Bay, same thing. Okay, oh, it's horrible, it's horrible, it's horrible. So, you know, which is it? Okay, I think that sometimes they give a free pass to Tom Ross and Pinehurst, but just because Bob Jones built a course that's 8 years old, they think that they can turn around and hold against that course what they praised Pinehurst for. So, we the media, you know, what's best for golf on television is not necessarily best for golf.
That's exactly right. And I was at Chambers Bay in October of 2014, so, you know, what, 7 or 8 months before the U.S. Open last year, and it was absolutely gorgeous. The golf course looked phenomenal. I thought, man, this is going to be great. And they just let it dry out and basically get completely brown, and, you know, and then they lost a couple of greens. They had trouble with that. So, you know, I just think they take it too far, Jay.
Well, you know, it once in a blue moon they've done it. Take it too far with Shinnecock, you know, in 04. It was unfortunate that with the way it looked and presented itself on television. But everybody, they're going back to Chambers Bay at some point. It's a phenomenal golf course, you know, so everybody can just chill out and enjoy it for what it was. Next year we get to go to Erin Hills. Following that, we're at Shinnecock, Pebble Beach, and Wingfoot, back-to-back-to-back. That's about as good as it gets.
Absolutely. Looking forward to Erin Hills. Looking forward to that a lot.
It'll be fun to hang in Wisconsin. I love my Wisconsin piece. You know, big cheer out to my boy, Dick Daly, and to Connie, and to all the rest of my friends that are out there. I will be seeing you guys. So, You know, we will have you back on in time for either the British Open or the PGA Championship. Thank you so much for joining us, Fred.
Absolutely, Jay. Always enjoy it, man.
Everybody, thank you so much for this extended version of the Jay's Place Show. Jay's Place is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It's the boldest, freshest, spiciest sauce out there. It's on every table in South. Put it on yours. If it's just JB's, it's the best. And if it's just Golf News Network, it's the best, too. You can catch Fred on Golf News Network and on Back 9 Network. I'm Jay Plummer. You can check me at jplummer.com and thegolfnewsnet.com. We will catch you guys next time.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.